We are holding on page Samach Dalad in Sanhedrin, about the middle of the page, middle of Ois Kuf Memaf. We started learning yesterday about the Mesim Shehech Yechezkel. You have the whole story in Sefer Yechezkel. We read it as Aftarah of Shabbos Chol HaMoed Pesach. Now Hashem sends Yechezkel to a valley full of dry bones and tells him to be Mechayim Mesim them. So we talked about, first of all, what happened to them afterwards. We had three different opinions. One is they lived for a short amount of time. They sang Shira and then they passed away again. We had an opinion that the whole thing was a mushel. And we had an opinion that that they actually lived long lives and they moved to Eretz Yisrael and lived out their lives over there. And we had Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira saying that he's actually descended from them. Okay, so now the Gemara says, "Uman ninu mesim shehech Yechezkel." So who were these mesim that Yechezkel revived anyway? Meaning, in other words, now, you know, the pasuk says it's a valley full of dry bones. You have to understand, you know, obviously there must have been some time when there was a huge massacre of Jews in one place, after a couple of thousand years of Golos, maybe there'd be less room for that question. Unfortunately, there have been far too many of those, but maybe the idea is that in Yechezkel's times, there had been relatively few of those yet, and therefore we want to see which group was it. Or maybe also the idea is, why Davka does this group get to have Tchias HaMesim? So Rav says the first opinion is Elu Bnei Ephraim from Monolokates V'Torah. These were the Bnei Ephraim who, about 1,000 years earlier, had calculated the kets of the Golos Mitzrayim, and they made a mistake. Namely, Rashi explains by the Bris Ben Absorim, Hashem had told Avram that your descendants are going to be enslaved by Eretz Lo Lahem, Arameis Shana. Now, the Arameis Shana, in fact, counts from when Yitzchak was born. In retrospect, it was like that. It was from when Yitzchak was born. At the time when Moshe came, actually, not everybody knew that, and some of them were kind of wondering how is it that it's only 210 years in Mitzrayim so far. But in retrospect, it turns out it was 400 years from when Yitzchak was born. Meanwhile, these Bnei Ephraim mistakenly thought that it counted from the actual Bris Ben Absorim, which Rashi points out. The actual Bris Ben Absorim took place when Avraham was 70. And Yitzchak was born when Avraham was 100. So it was 430 years, which is why you have a pasuk in Parshas Bo that says that the Jewish people have lived there 430 years. Shloshim Shana, Baba Meis Shana, meaning from the Bris Ben Absorim until Yitzchak's Mitzrayim was 430 years. So these Bnei Ephraim, after 400 years from the Bris Ben Absorim, then was in when Avraham was 70, which is in the year 2018. So now came the year. Now came the year 2418, and they thought that it's time for Yitzchak Mitzrayim. So they left, and they got killed on the way. Had they managed to leave Mitzrayim in the first place, when we know that Mitzrayim was sealed shut against any slaves escaping, the Ramaphoshim will point out that since after all, Ephraim is a son of Yosef. Still, the Mitzrayim had some, even though they tried to forget Asher LaYada as Yosef, they still had a certain grudging respect for Yosef, for what he had accomplished from Mitzrayim, and therefore, like, they treated his children and his descendants less harshly, and therefore they were able to get out. So, Dichtshenema, so the Pasuk describes it in Divayam, Uvnei Ephraim Shuselach, this is the sons of Ephraim were Shuselach, one of his sons was Shuselach, Uvered Bnoi Vesachas Bnoi Ve'elod Bnoi Vesachas Bnoi Ve'zovah Bnoi Vesushelach Bnoi Ve'ezah Ve'elod, so these are these all direct children of Ephraim, or are some of these Ephraim's direct children, and the rest of them are second or third generation descendants. Different Mephoshim talk about, but anyway, the point is, the pasuk continues. Rogum anshe gas ha'nelodim ba'aretz, whatever. The people of Gas, the Plishtim who lived in Gas, killed them who had been born in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Killed them. So what happened? These Bnei Ephraim, who are listed over here, a whole group of them went through the land of the Plishtim to try to get to Eretz Yisrael, and the people of Gas. And then the pasuk continues, Ki yodu lo kachas es mikneim. They tried to take cattle from the people of Gas, and they ended up killing them. Why Dafka Gas? Marsha points out that after all, there had been the shvuah between Avraham and Yitzchak, and between Avraham and the Plishtim, and between Yitzchak and the Plishtim, and now these guys were over on the shvuah, and they were trying to take the Plishtim's cattle. So therefore, they ended up getting killed. This is, by the way, why? When you have Bayitzias Mitzrayim, when Hashem, when it says, V'lenocham alekim gerach eretz plishtim, that Hashem didn't want to take them through the land of the plishtim, because pen yira amnohem, pen yinocham am b'roisim lochama, they might see war, and then v'shovah Mitzrayim, one explanation is that they're going to see, that one explanation is they're going to see the remains, they're going to see the bones of these B'nai Ephraim, and that's going to scare them and say, if they didn't make it through, neither are we, and they're going to turn around and go back to Mitzrayim, which is why the Eivishter took them the long way around through the Midbar. So the pasuk continues, Vayis'abel Ephraim Aviyam Yomim Rabim, their father Ephraim mourned for many days. This would imply that Ephraim was still alive at the time, only 30 years before Yetzias Mitzrayim, which means that he lived an amazingly long time. Vayavoyu Echav L'Nachma, and his brothers came to comfort him. What brothers? It could be Menashe, it could be Menashe was still alive. It can mean his relatives. Sometimes we find that relatives are more generally called brothers. Or it can be, you know, Yaakov tells him, Mefarshim on the pasuk point out, Yaakov tells Yosef, after he tells him that Ephraim and Menashe will be Shvatim of their own, he tells him, any other children that you had after them are going to be considered one, a part of one or the other of those Shvatim, so it could be those brothers. Anyway, so they came to comfort him, and the pasuk goes on to describe that Ephraim had more children, and eventually from them a major portion of Shevet Ephraim descended from them. Now, in fact, actually, Mefarshim point out, and you look at the figures of the size of Shevet Ephraim between the first census and the Midbar and the second one, you find they went down by several thousand, and that's because we're saying here, even before Yetzias Mitzrayim, a lot of them had been killed. Anyway, so now, according to Rav, these bones are now the ones that all these years later Yechezkel revived. So one idea is the Mavit writes, then, since we had an opinion that said they went up to Eretz Yisrael and had children, etc., the idea would be that they wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael. They went about it the wrong way, but they wanted to, and therefore the Eivishter finally gave them what they wanted, and they're able to come from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael and build families over there. And as we talked about yesterday, there's a vort on it that when Rabbi Hordim and Seder says he's descended from them, that's why he doesn't have a chelik in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so that's one opinion. Shmuel says the people who were revived by Yechezkel are people who were denied Tchias HaMesim. So they don't really even deserve Tchias HaMesim, but nevertheless, the Eivishter brought them alive as a simon for the rest of the Jewish people. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Vayomer Elai, Hashem says to me, after the whole thing is over, after they had been revived, Hashem says to Yechezkel, Ben Adam, Ha'atzamas Sa'ela Kol Beis Yisrael Hema, these bones represent the entire Jewish people, so they're not literally the entire Jewish people, but they're a simon, they're representatives of the entire Jewish people. Hine Oimrim, behold, they have said, Yobshu Atzmei Seinu, our bones have dried up, V'obda Sifoseinu, and our hope is gone, Nigzau Nolano, we're cut off, we're goners. So these are people who are denied Tchias HaMesim, and really, they should not have a chelik l'olam haba, but the simon Hashem brought them alive again. So that would follow. One of the opinions, that would fit better with one of the opinions, then, that they were brought alive just to demonstrate the reality of Tchias HaMesim, and then they sang Shira and died again. Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba Amar, Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba says a third possibility. Eile b'nei Adam shein b'em lachluchis shal mitzvah. These are Jews who didn't have the slightest moisture of mitzvah. They didn't have even the slightest trace of a mitzvah. So in other words, they didn't deny Tchias HaMesim, but they didn't have any trace of mitzvahs, so people would have thought, they're not really, how could they deserve Tchias HaMesim? Nevertheless, the Eibishter brought them alive, Maharsha explains, to show that Hashem is not giving up even on them. They may have to go through a spell in Gehenim, but then they are going to have Tchias HaMesim. At the beginning of it, Yechezkel was told to say, you dry bones, listen to the word of Hashem. So these are people who had dry bones. They had their bones had never been moistened by the freshness of mitzvahs. Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha says another possibility. These are people who, when they were alive, they had covered the walls of the Heichel with pictures of creepy crawling creatures, and they had worshipped them as Avodah Zarah. Shenema, as you find earlier in Sefer Yechezkel, Hashem takes Yechezkel in a vision of Nevuah. He takes him to Yerushalayim. He was physically in Babel. He was living in Babel at the time because he was part of Golas Yechonia, but he has a vision where the Eibishter takes him to Yerushalayim and shows him around to see the Avodah Zarah that's going on, and he describes at one point the Eibishter brings him to a secret room in the Heichel, V'ogoy V'era, and he says, I came in and I saw, V'hine kol savnis remetz v'hemah sheket, and I saw that there were pictures of all kinds of crawling creatures and animals and all kinds of disgusting creatures. B'chogilule Beis Yisrael, and all kinds of Avodah Zarahs that Jews are worshipping, M'chuka al Akir, engraved on the walls, Saviv Saviv, all around. So they engraved these pictures on the wall, and they were worshipping them. So Saviv Saviv, when Yechezkel now is describing the dry bones, he says that Hashem took him around and around to see them. So therefore, the same expression, Saviv Saviv, shows that, says Rabbi Yitzchok Nachman, that these are the same people who had done that Avera. What's the connection? So first of all, again, the point is that even though they were horrible Rishoyim and had done and had defiled the Beis Mikdash itself, nevertheless, Hashem's not giving up on them and Hashem's still giving them a shot at Tchias HaNesim. But Maharsha points out also like this. Behema is one thing. Behemas, regular animals, live relatively long lifespans. But Shkotsim or Ramosim don't even have bones in them, and they don't live for very long. Later on in the Perek, we're going to talk about, when we talk about the Mabel, that such creatures, the Gemara establishes that that invertebrates, creatures that don't have bones, don't live more than 12 months, which has actually certain implications in Halacha, as far as worms and bugs found in fruits or vegetables or whatnot, but also we'll talk about it in connection with the Teva in that case, and how, where there's such invertebrates coming out of the Teva after the Mabel. We'll learn about that later in the Perek. Anyway, the point is, so now, when they made these pictures on the wall, and they were worshipping them, it meant they were representing, they were symbolizing with that the idea that the whole world is just going to, everything in the world just eventually decays and falls apart, and there's nothing left out of it. So Yov Shratz Meisenu, our bones are gone. In other words, we're no better, they argued, than the bugs and worms and whatnot. We're never coming back. They didn't believe there's an etzem luz from which the body is going to be rebuilt. So therefore, so now the Eivishta brought them alive to demonstrate that it's not so. A person is not like that. A person has an etzem luz and will come back to life, unlike the shkotzim or ramosim.
Their punishment is their reward.
So in other words, we're saying they acted this way. They claim that there's no reality to Tchias HaMesim. So in other words, we're saying, like we said, Kofar B'Tchias HaMesim, but beyond that, they were saying that a person in that regard is no better than a worm or a bug or whatever that lives for a short time and then dies and is gone forever.
So
now the Eibishter brought them alive to demonstrate that that's not true. You do, in fact, have an etzem luz, and you're going to come alive by virtue of that.
And you're still going to get Tchias HaMesim.
So then we're saying, so this group got Tchias HaMesim. So again, one possibility is this. Well, whether they're going to have Tchias HaMesim again, loss of love, maybe not. When we said at the beginning of the parak, anybody is clear for Tchias HaMesim is not. The idea would be over here, maybe again, Rabbi Yitzchok Nachman maybe following, or maybe saying, like Shmuel, one second. Shmuel had just said a few lines earlier, Eile b'nei Adam shekofer b'tchias ha-mesim, and Rashi pointed out, in that case, if they were kofer b'tchias ha-mesim, they don't really deserve tchias ha-mesim. But Hashem brought them alive as a simon for the Jewish people. So Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha may be taking the same view, according to Maharsha, that since these people also were kofer b'tchias ha-mesim, more specifically, they claim there's no etzem luz, so also they shouldn't really deserve tchias ha-mesim, and the Eibishter did it as a special thing in order to demonstrate the reality of tchias ha-mesim. Does that mean that these people are going to again have tchias ha-mesim loss of love? That may depend which of the opinions before Rabbi Yitzchak, maybe that depends on which of the opinions before Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha holds that these mesim accomplished during that time of their life. Did they just sing shira and die again in that case? And they didn't have an other, well, even then, you could say if they sang shira, means they acknowledge that the Eidishtah is Mechayim Esim, so they did acknowledge it after all, therefore they have another shot. And especially if you say that Nosu Noshim got a little bonum of honors, that they lived out long lives in Eretz Yisrael, then certainly you have they had an opportunity to regain it for themselves. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan says another explanation. Elu Mesim Shabikas Dura. The Mesim that Yechezkel revived are the people who had been killed by Nebuchadnezzar in the valley of Dura, which is a large valley in Babel. You want to know where Bikas Dura is? I mean, Har Eshel ad Rabsi Bikas Dura, from the river Eshel until Rabsi. These were known landmarks in Babel. From one till the other is the area called Bikas Dura. Why is that important for us to know? So first of all, we're going to say because Nebuchadnezzar killed many Jews there, but we're going to go on to say in the next Ois that was also where Nebuchadnezzar set up his gigantic statue. So we're going to start talking about that shortly. The Pasuk mentions in Daniel, when it tells that story, it says that he set it up in the Valley of Dura. So now the Gemara is identifying for us where that Valley of Dura is, and we're saying that also Nebuchadnezzar killed many Jews over there. So what happened? V'amr Rabbi Yechanan, she'b'shar she'hegel Nebuchadnezzar as Yisrael, when Nebuchadnezzar took the Jewish people into Golus at the time of Churban Bayis Rishon, hoya ben bachurin shem ganan asachama b'yoyfion. There were young men among the Jewish people who they were so beautiful and so radiant that they put the sun to shame with their beauty. Like the sun was like nothing as far as its brightness and its beauty relative to theirs. So the Goyish women of Babel, the women of Kastim, were seeing these very, very handsome men, the Shoifos Zivus, and they were flowing with Zivus. They had such a taiva for them that it was causing them to have an unnatural flow of blood from their uterus. So they became Zivos. They became Zavos. Now, of course, for Goyim, they don't have the issue of Tumah V'Tahara as we do, but nevertheless, it was still something that their husbands didn't like, the idea that these women are having a taiva for other men. Omru l'Baalein, so they told their husbands, l'Baalein l'Melech, and their husbands in turn told the king. V'tziva ha'melech v'horgum, so the king gave orders that they should be killed, so this way the women won't be so attracted to them anymore. V'adayin ha'yushoifet zivus, even when these young Jewish men are dead, still they were so handsome, even their bodies were so, their faces were still so handsome, that the women were still having zivus from them. V'tziva ha'melech v'romsum, so now the king gave orders that they should be trampled by his men or their horses or whatever. So now, then these bones are, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, these are people who were killed unjustly by Nebuchadnezzar. They didn't deserve to be, killed like that. So now the Eibishter brought them alive again, so that Nebuchadnezzar doesn't get to accomplish what he set out to do. So now let's talk about what happened over there in Bikas Dura and about the mason that Yechezkel revived, and now we're going to talk about something else that happened at the same time. We learn in a Braisa. Now, we have, in Sefer Daniel, you have the story that Nebuchadnezzar set up a gigantic golden statue and gave orders that all the nations should send representatives to bow down to it. Mephoshim explained, now on the face of it, it was of a desire, and then we have the famous thing, that Hanani Mishal Vazayu refused to bow to it, and went on Mysterious Nefesh, and Nebuchadnezzar threw them into a fiery furnace. What happened to Daniel at the time, the Gemara is going to deal with later, where was Daniel at the time, because he doesn't appear in that entire story. Anyway, so on the face of it, it was of a desire, and it was partially a matter that they went on Mysterious Nefesh not to bow to it. On the other hand, Tosfos in a number of places in Shas points out, based on certain things that the Gemara says on the subject and also certain phrases in the pasuk, that it may not have been Avodah Zarah per se. It was rather that Nebuchadnezzar set it up as a symbol of his majesty. So ordinarily, there wouldn't necessarily be a problem bowing to it, but nevertheless, Hanani Mishael Vazari still refused to anyway. What's going on according to that? Mephoshim explained like this. In the previous Perek in Daniel, in Perek Beis, you have a story where Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and then he forgot the dream, and he threatened to execute all of his advisors if they can't tell him what the dream was and what the interpretation is, and finally Daniel comes forward and says he can do it, and then all of them are saying, you tell us the dream, your majesty, we can interpret it, but we can't interpret a dream that you can't even tell us. And he's very mad about it, and then Daniel is given a special Ruach HaKodesh by the Eivishter to know what it was. He reminds Nebuchadnezzar of the dream. The gist of it is that he saw this big statue with different parts of it made out of different materials, the head made out of gold, the chest made out of silver, the next lower part out of copper, etc. And it represented the Arba Malchus, it represented Bavel, Poros, Mada, Yovan, and Edom, who are going to rule over the Jewish people one after the other until Mashiach comes. And then Nebuchadnezzar sees in the dream a stone that comes and knocks down this thing and shatters it to bits and grows into a mountain, which is representing Melech HaMashiach. So now, Mephoshim explained, and the point is, in other words, Daniel explained to Nebuchadnezzar, you had been wondering, you rule over a world empire, you're wondering, well, what's going to be after you, and now you were shown in a dream that it was just showing you what's going to be. So now, then, the idea is, since in the dream, the head and the top of the statue was made out of gold, representing Nebuchadnezzar and his empire, so he decided to make a statue of entirely gold and force everybody to bow to it, with the idea being that way everybody, all the nations' representatives, representing the nations themselves, will be acknowledging that the gold Nebuchadnezzar is going to rule forever. It's not going to be a head of gold and then a chest of silver, part of Samadha, etc. It's always going to be, Bavel is going to rule forever. And Hanani Mishael Vazari then refused to bow to it. So the Gemara says, "Tanan Abanan b'shal shehibul Nebuchadnezzar Hanani Mishael Vazari l'kiv shana'ish." When Nebuchadnezzar threw Hanani Mishael Vazari into this fiery furnace, at that point was also the same time, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yechezkel, Leich Rahachya Mesim Bikas Dura. Go revive the Mesim in the Valley of Dura, which again is actually the same area, because the Valley of Dura, the Pasuk says, is where the statue had been set up. What's the connection? Why do these two things go together? So one idea is the Maharal explains, because both of those really are a matter of Tchias HaMesim, that Chanan Mishal Bazari should be able to go into a fiery furnace, and one which, as we're going to go on to learn, was heated enormously much more than any normal furnace, and yet they survived it. That itself is kind of like a Tchias HaMesim. So therefore, at the same time, the Eibishter is doing another Tchias HaMesim as well. Another point is also, we said before, we have the different opinions who these Mesim were, and according to many of the opinions, they didn't really deserve Tchias HaMesim. They were kosher b'Tchias HaMesim, or they had no lachluchas, shal mitzvah, etc. So therefore, the idea is, on their own, they might not be zoichatir. But while the Eibishter is doing a nest for the tzaddikim, Chanani Mishal Vazalia, then at the same time, then you can have people who are not so worthy can join in, and they can participate in a semblance of the nest also, and therefore, at the same time, then they're going to be, at the same time that the Eibishter is doing a nest to save Chanan and Mishael Bazaria, then also these guys can be saved and revived as well. Okay. So the Gemara continues, Kivin Shehechya Oysam, when he revived them, Bo Atsomos V'Tofcholoi Lo'Oysa Rosh HaShochit Tamya Alponav, bones from there. The Pasuk describes how first the bones had to join back together into complete skeletons, and then they got flesh and gidim and everything on them. So it's doing that, while that was going on, some of those bones came from the valley and slapped and then banged and slapped the V'Hanetzer in the face. Shochit Tamya means his own bones deserve to be ground up. Shchitanya means his bones should be ground up. The Gemara uses it, something Gemara and Midrashim sometimes use it as an epithet for certain notorious Rishoyim, like they themselves deserve to have no menucha. Even in the grave, they deserve to have their bones ground up. So now these bones from the Mesim came and slapped him in the face. So why? What does that mean? So Rashi says one possibility is they came and hit him, and then they went back to Bikas Dura and continued the job of being reassembled into skeletons and into bodies. Marsha points out, in that case, then, it doesn't really need to be they went, because it's all in the same area, it's all in Bikas Dura, so it's not like they had far to travel. It actually gives another explanation, which is that Nebuchadnezzar had taken some of these bones and made kalim out of them. Like he had made like drinking vessels and things out of them. So now when this is going on, he was about to drink from one of them, and now it came and then hit him in the face. Omar, so Matis, he says to Nebuchadnezzar, is very shocked. Mati ben Shalayda, what's going on over here? Omruloi, so they told him, Chavreim Shalayda, Machayim Mesim, Bikas Dura, the colleague of these guys, Hanani Mishal Vazaria, who you just threw into the furnace and was saved with Derech Nes, right now, their colleague, Yechezkel, is reviving the dead in Bikas Dura. So it's all happening at the same time. Daniel was elsewhere. We're going to talk about later in the Gemara where Daniel was at the time. We're going to bring a number of different opinions. Hakol Moedim, everybody agrees he wasn't there, because if he was there, he also would have gone on Mesiras Nefesh, like Hanani Mishal Vazaria, but yeah. There was, by the way, a medrash in that connection that makes another connection between Yechezkel and Hanani Mishal Vazaria. The medrash said, actually two things. Later on in the Perek, we're going to talk about, but this, well, you have to realize that all of this was right after the Churban. There had been a Churban, there had been a Golus, Nebuchadnezzar was ruling over the whole world. So it's not just, we said before, there were individuals who were kofer b'tchias HaMesim, etc. But in general, the point is, there were a lot of Jews who were discouraged. It seems that Pashut, Jewish history is over, Chas V'Shalom, and that's it. We have no future. We have no, that's it, we're goners. So now the Eibishter has to show them through this that no, it's not so, there is going to be a future for the Jewish people, just like there was a future for these guys. By the way, if you ever visit Yad Vashem in Yerushalayim, you go through the whole museum over there and all the tragic things you see over there, and then you come out to a porch like area over there overlooking the hills and the forests of Yehuda, and you have inscribed over there, you have a portal inscribed over there on above the porch that's inscribed with words from the pasuk, "Nasati ruchi v'chem b'chisem v'yinachti eschem al admaskem." I'll put my spirit into you and you'll live, and I'll put you on your land. So it's very appropriate, like after going through that valley of dry bones, and we have the schus to be alive again and to be in Eretz Yisrael. So first of all, later in the Perek, we're going to learn that there were people who, even some of the Chachamim, who came to Yechezkel and argued, that's it, it's like the Eibishter has divorced us, so like we're a slave that Hashem has sold, he has no claim over us anymore, we can do whatever we want. And the Ebishter tells Yechezkel to tell them, absolutely not, I'm ruling over you and you're my people, whether you like it or not. So there is actually a Medrash that says that among them were Hanani, Mishael, Azariah. So in that case, they had a doubt in their Amunah about this also. But then there's another Medrash that also says that they came to Yechezkel to ask, Nebuchadnezzar is making these plans, he's going to set up this gigantic statue, what should we do? So Yechezkel told them, you should run away. Don't stick around. If you do, you're going to be forced to bow to it. And then if not, then Nebuchadnezzar is going to kill you. And they say, Adrabah, we'll stick around and we're ready to go on Mesiras Nefesh to publicly demonstrate that a Yid doesn't bow to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. And Yechezkel tells them, the Ebishter told me in Nevuah that he's not going to save you. They say, it doesn't matter. We're doing it anyway. They leave, and then the Ebishter says to Yechezkel, you think I'm really not going to save them? Of course I'm going to save them. I didn't want them to know that, because they can't go into a situation of Mesiras Nefesh knowing that the Ebishter is going to save them. But of course, I'm going to make a tremendous Kiddush Hashem and save them. So we see that Yechezkel was actually very much involved in this whole story. So now we're saying he was also Mechayim Nesim at this time. By the way, there's a very interesting medrash as a side thing, talking about Yechezkel and the dry bones and reviving them. There's a very interesting detail in a medrash that says that when all the bodies came alive, one of them did not. One of them is still lying over there. And Yechezkel asks, what's the matter with this guy? And the Ebishter replies to him by quoting a pasuk from one of Yechezkel's own nevuahs. He said, "Baneshech nosan v'saris lokach." He took neshech v'taris. He took ribis from Jews while he was alive. V'choy. And you think that he should live? Lo yichye, he's not going to live. So the medrash, in other words, the medrash is saying, a person who lends Jews money at that ribis is not going to come alive by Tchias Amesim. They tell a story in that connection involving, I believe I've heard the story involving Rabbi Yosha Ber, the Beis Halevi, but I don't know if it's actually with him. It's, sometimes you have these stories about the Chochmah of a Rav that are attributed to him, even when it happened with other Rabbanim. Anyway, the story goes that one time there was a Yid that used to tackle lend money at ribis. And when he died, the Chevra Kadisha demanded a much larger amount for his burial and for his kever than they normally would anybody else. So the family takes the Chevra Kadisha to Beis Din. How are you talking? You're charging so much. So the Beis HaLevi says, you know what? The Chevra Kadisha is in the right. Normally, when you buy a kever, he points out, you're not really buying the kever. You're renting it. Because after all, there's going to be Tchias HaMeisim, you're not going to be there forever. But this guy, based on this medrash, he's not going to have Tchias HaMeisim, so it's not a rental, it's a sale. Of course, a sale is going to be more than a rental. Yeah. They say also, I remember once coming across the Gleich Vertel, maybe it was also from the Beis HaLevi, maybe it was from somebody else, I don't know, that said, why taka should that be? What's the logic? A person is a lens at ribis, he doesn't get tchias hamesim. The vort is, you think about it, most things a person earns money, you have to work for, you have to put in effort. Ribis is one of those things. You can be just lying in bed and your money is increasing on its own. So therefore, so a person is going to want to come alive by Tchias HaMeisim, maybe she just says, you don't need it. Sleep a little longer, stay there a little longer, and your money is going to be increasing anyhow. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. So Nebuchadnezzar is shocked to find out about this Tchias HaMeisim, and he's told that it's actually happening at the same time. Pasach v'Omer, so immediately Nebuchadnezzar opened up and started praising the Ebishter v'Omer, and he says in the words of the Pasuk, Asoyi k'mor Rav Ravin, how great are Hashem's wonders, the Simhoyi k'mor Sakifin, and how powerful are the surprising things that he does, Malchuseh Malchus Olam v'Gomer. His kingship is a kingship forever, and he continues, v'sholtonei b'chol der v'der, and his dominion is over every generation. So he's starting to praise Hashem for this. Why all the expressions? Marsha explains, the Asoi k'mor Rav Ravin is the amazing thing that the Ebishter did such a great thing of saving Hanani, Mishael v'Azariah, and Simhoi k'mor Takifin refers to how wondrous it is that Hashem is Mechayim Mason. Takifin, Marsha points out, the word takif means strong, so it's an exact translation of gibber, as we have in davening. After gibber, lo'olam Hashem, Mechayim Mason. And then when he says Malchusim, Malchus Olam, B'Sholtone, B'Chol Der B'Der, refers to all the different generations over which, all the different generations of human history, from beginning to end, where Hashem rules over them and Hashem dominates them. Now, the interesting thing is that it stops right there. So you actually have, in Sefer Daniel, you have like this. You have the story of, that story of Hanani, Mishael v'Azariah and the fiery furnace takes up most of Perek Gimel. The division of Perekim, as we know, was made up by the Goyim. But now you have, at the end of that Perek, you have a section over there where Nebuchadnezzar is writing an open letter to his entire empire and telling them about the amazing things Hashem did. Now, if you look in the context of the Psukim, you actually have that that actually when he starts by saying these praises of Hashem, this is by way of introduction to the story that he continues to tell in Perek Dalet of what happens to him regarding another dream of his and how he became crazy and lived like an animal for several years. Nevertheless, though, the Gemara is understanding over here that it's also his reaction to what happened over here with Hanania, Mishael, and Azariah, and with the Mason being revived. So it's interesting then that the Goyim actually put that at the end of Perek Gimel rather than putting it into Perek Dalet together with the rest of the story. So I guess whichever the Goyim who made up that division also had the notion, Lahavdil, like the Gemara is saying over here, that in fact it is connected with what came before and not only with what after. Anyway, the point is that you have, so he says these praises, and then he stops right there, and then he continues with the story of, his dream and what happened to him. So what happened? Why did he stop? So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Yutzak Zohav Reseach Losech Piv Shal Oyser Rosh HaShochet Tamya. Molten gold ought to be poured into the mouth of that Rosha whose bones deserve to be ground up. Meaning, basically, it's a nice way of saying, instead of molten gold, it would be something like molten dung, like molten waste or something should be poured into his mouth to shut him up because he was such a rasha. But because he was a king, then the Gemara instead speaks of him a little more respectfully, as though like you would have to pour molten gold down his throat. But in other words, he deserves to have been stopped from praising Hashem more. So molel le bal malach v'sotrei al piv, if not for a malach coming and slapping him on the mouth, bikish leganis kol shiris v'tishvachos shom adavid b'sefer tilim. He would have put to shame all the praises and all the songs and all the praises that David said in Sefer Tehillim. In other words, Maharsha explains like this one. He says, Malchus and Malchus Olam, v'sholtone b'chol dar v'dar, he would have gone on continuing to praise Hashem and what Hashem did in every generation. But now, a malach came and then slapped him on the mouth and made him stop. Now, what do you mean, Laganis, kol shiris v'tishvachis, his praises would have been better than those of David HaMelech? So the Rambam Foshim will explain, it doesn't mean they would have been better, but it means that they would have sounded better to regular people. Regular people only look at the music and the poetry of things would have thought that Nebuchadnezzar's compositions are better than Tillim. Of course, they wouldn't really have been. There's a vote from a Mayor Premishlaner on it that says that actually what it means is that a Rosha like that, with a filthy mouth like that, should be saying that the Shiras for the Shvachas of Tillim, that itself would put them to shame, that the holy words of Tillim should be said by someone like him, and therefore the Malach came and shut him up. And the Kotzker has a vote on it. He says that this is all part of it. He says, you know, you think of it, David HaMelech didn't have an easy life. David HaMelech went through many slaps on his face during his lifetime, real and metaphorical. And yet he's always singing to the Eidish. We have in Hallel, you know, today being in the Shodesh, Kosi Shoes Esther Vashem Hashem Ekra, when things are good, then I call out the Eidish's name, and sort of Yavin Emso Vashem Hashem Ekra. And when I have hardships and difficulties, then also I call in the name of Hashem. So now the Malach comes and slaps the Mohanetzer on the face, basically to say, you think you're better than David? Let's see if you're still prepared to sing to the Eidish after a slap. And Itaka wasn't, showing that he's not like that. He's not sort of a young Nemso of Hashem, Hashem Ekra, and therefore his praises of Hashem are not even going to begin to bear comparison with David's. Anyway, the point is, that's why, like you have there again, you have that pasuk where he says this praise of Hashem, and like it stops abruptly, and he goes into his story about what happened with his second dream and all. That's why, because a malach stopped him from praising Hashem any further. Maharsha brings up a point over here, by the way. Well, first of all, Maharsha points out, you know, it wouldn't be right that Nebuchadnezzar, who destroyed the Beis Mikdash, should outshine the Tillim that David, who made all the preparations to build the Beis Mikdash, so it's not right, and therefore the Malach stopped him. Maharsha also points out, you know, the Gemara tells us in Sota and in other places that the Malachim don't understand Aramaic. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, of course, is speaking in Aramaic, and the Pasuk in Sefer Daniel records what he's saying in that language. So how do the Malachim understand? So Maharsha says, you could say that the Mekatrigim, the Malachim who accuse the Jewish people, don't know Aramaic. But the Malachim who defend the Jewish people, of course, they understand all the languages, and therefore they could understand what he's saying, and they stopped him. Ion Yaakov says it just gives a different point. He says, no, from the Gemara and Sota, it's clear that in general, none of the Malachim know Aramaic. But the difference is, the Gemara says Gavriel does, as we find that Gavriel taught Yosef the 70 languages, so he understands Aramaic and all the languages very well. Gavriel was here because he was the one who cooled down the fire of the Derech Nes to save Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. So therefore, so now while he was there, he also slapped Nebuchadnezzar on the mouth and got him to stop speaking. Another point, by the way, as far as this point that we're saying that when all this happened was also when Tobias the Mason was taking place. So Ion Yaakov and Yad Yosef both point out, it also shows that the Eibishter is the one who has the ultimate control over life and death. Here, Nebuchadnezzar thought that he could kill Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. And no, on the contrary, not only are they being saved, but even other people are coming alive as well. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Shisha Nisim Nasu Ba'Oisayim. Six Nisim happened on that day. Eluhain. And they are as follows. Sof HaKiv. Now, we have to understand that this Kiv Shana Esh, this fiery furnace that Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah were thrown into, was an underground pit. The normal way, a furnace like that, a Kiv Shana Esh, would usually be used for making lime. You would have it would be an oven. It would be a fiery pit into which you would put limestones to burn them and make lime. So normally it would be a pit in the ground lined with lime, and then you would put them, and then you'd heat it. You'd heat it up to a high temperature, and then you'd burn limestone in it. So now if it was below ground level, now the point is that the Pesukim make it clear that everybody was able to see the nest that Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah survived in there. So Shisha Nisim Nasu Ba'Oisayim. Six Nisim happened on that day. Eluhain, there as follows. First of all, Sofa Kibshan, the Kibshan floated to the surface. So like this, in other words, so everybody should be able to see. The Nifrat HaKivshan, second of all, the walls of it fell down, again, because otherwise it's got walls around it to retain the heat. And again, that would defeat the purpose. Nobody would be able to see the nest, so therefore the walls had to collapse. The Humak Surai, and the third nest is Humak Surai. Literally, Humak means melted away or lowered, and Surai has a variety of different meanings. So Rashi gives a couple of explanations what it means. First of all, Humak Surai can mean Nishbal Gavosai, its pride was brought low, which would mean, in other words, the intensity of the fire of it was lessened so that Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah could live in it. There's a Gemara in Pesachim that says that's actually what happened. The Gemara we'll talk about soon in the Gemara, that on the outside, the fire was made hotter and hotter in order to burn all the guards who had thrown Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah into the fire. Meanwhile, on the inside, it's cool, and they're walking around, and they're like a garden. So Humak Surai then would mean that its intensity, its gaiva, was brought low. Then Rashi says another explanation. The word is, the second word is not Surai, but Sudai, Meloshin Yisoidai. Yeah, that would mean the Yisoid, the foundation of it, caved in. So even though it was brought above ground, but the foundation of it caved in, maybe with the idea that way the fire will be further underground and it won't harm them. Then Rashi says a third explanation brings from another one of his Rebbeim, that the word is Vuhumak Sidai. That the second word is sidoi, which means it's lime or it's plaster. The lining of lime or plaster that lined the sides of this thing was so hot over there that it melted away and turned into a river of burning. That turned into a river of burning lime, which, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, ended up killing the goyim who had been involved in this whole thing. Which in that case, Ben Yehoyada says, so then what's the chiddush? Of course, if it's a very hot fire, then of course the lime is going to melt away and flow away like a river. He says that's the point. Since the fire was made cool on the inside, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, then it was a big nest that on the outside it was so intense after all, the plaster itself lined the inside of the Kivshan Eish, where they are, and yet the same fire, which is cool enough for them to be living in it, is also hot enough at the same time to melt away the sid. That's a big nest. Okay, so you have several different explanations of this Humak Surai. The fourth nest, the Netach Tselem Aponav, the Tselem, this giant statue that Nebuchadnezzar had made, was thrown down on its face. The Medrash, in fact, ties that together with the Tchias HaMeisim from before. The Medrash says that the Eibishter sent a wind which knocked over the statue, and that same wind went on to be Mechaya the Meisim, the Ruach, the wind, the spirit that came into them to revive them. The Medrash, by the way, tells that this statue, the Pasuk describes, it was 60 amas tall and 6 amas wide. And the question is, that wouldn't stand. It wouldn't be stable. So the Medrash says, actually, Nebuchadnezzar kept on trying to put up, and it kept toppling over until they had to eventually take all the gold and silver from Yerushalayim and melt it to make a base for it so that it would stand firm. But now we're saying, despite that, the wind came and knocked it over. The next one, Nisrufu Dalad Malchus, four kingdoms, four groups, And kings and their men were burnt by the fire. And the sixth thing, the Hechi Yechezkel also Mason, Bikas Dura, and Yechezkel revived the Mason and Bikas Dura. So six Nissim happened on that day. And the Maharal points out, you know, the same way as we had by Pinchas, six Nissim that happened, which represents like it was a totality of Nissim, like the whole thing is one big nest, the same way six Nissim over here represents the same kind of idea. And he goes on to explain, Hanani Mishov Azariah, he says, correspond to Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, and therefore three of the Nissim correspond directly to them, and the other three are like outgrowths of them, and he has a whole explanation of that. Anyway, so the Gemara points out the Chulu Gemara. Now, the fact that these six Nissim happen, most of them we know only the Kabbalah. But Radalat Malchius, but the fact that the four kings and their hangers on were burnt, Kroy, that we have a pasuk that tells us that. Namely, Dichtim, the pasuk says, Nebuchadnezzar, Malchus, Shlach, Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had called together, had sent messengers to call Lemichnash to gather together, La'acha Shapanaya, Signayo, Fachavosa, Adar Gozraya, Gedovraya, Desovraya, Tiftoye. These are seven different, from on the pasuk explain that on Pshat level, these are the names of different levels of ministers, but the Gemara is understanding that these are actually names of nations, names of kings of different nations and their ministers. And he continues, V'chel Shil Tornim Medinos, and all the and all the rulers of the countries, and he ordered them to bow to the statue. Then later on, it says, after Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah are coming out of the fire, the three of them, Achashapanaya, Signayo, Fachavosa, are gathering together, Vahadobre Malka, and the king's ministers, Chazayin, the Gavraya, Ilach, Vagomer, and they saw that these guys, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, had not been burned. So four of the names from before, Gedavraya, Adagazraya, Gedavraya, Gedavraya, Tiftoya, are missing. So now the Gemara is understanding why, because they were burnt. And the pasuk had said that the men who had thrown Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah into the fire were killed by a tongue of fire that came out of this tremendously hot fire. So now we're saying they were killed by that, as the pasuk says, and now therefore they're missing in the list later on. So that's the one nest that we see a hint for in the pasuk, and all the others we have the Kabbalah that it was said. Yomim Mashiach Gula, first grade of Shvodish Elul. Every yid, noshim, even children, has an achrayus to increase in his avoda and bring Mashiach to Kenan poil mamish. How does that in Voska state and in what does that avoda show itself as bepashtus? Increasing in Torah and mitzvahs, increasing in limud haTorah, nigla and pimiyas haTorah, and keeping mitzvahs behavior. Okay, continuing on Hilchos Tefillin. We started talking about when you take off the tefillin. So we said on a regular day, in principle, you could take them off after the kedusha and avol tzion, but after kabbalah, you should wait until after kaddish shalom, and then the arizal would wait until after valken the kava. And we talked about yesterday. When there's a milah, then you shouldn't take off the tefillin until after the bris milah. Because the idea, then you have the two oises of tefillin and a milah together. On a day of Kriyas HaTorah, when you're going to be putting back the Sefer Torah after Avol Tzion, then the minhag is not to take them off until after the Sefer Torah is brought back to the Arayin. The idea being that way, as the pasuk says, "Vayavra Malkum Lefneim Vashem Berosham," the king passed before them, representing the procession when we bring the Sefer Torah back to the Aron Kodesh, and Hashem, the tefillin, is on our heads. So therefore, so you should wait till after it's put out, it's taken off. And Cholamoyed, for those who put on tefillin during Cholamoyed, to take them off before Hallel, during Chazaras HaShatz, and then the Chazan takes them off after Hallel, then during Cholamoyed Sukkos, then the Chazan can also take it off before Hallel, because everybody's busy getting out their lulav and esrogim. And on Rosh Chodesh, when we have those who say Keser and Musaf, as we do, take off the tefillin before Musaf, after Avol Tzion, because it's not right that we should be crowned in tefillin when we say Keser Yitnu Lecha. Even those places that don't have the minhag to say Keser, nevertheless, the minhag is to take them off before Musaf. So our minhag is indeed that we take off the dashis after Avol Tzion and after the Sefer Torah is brought back. We take off the dashis, put on a bit of tams, say what we're supposed to say in them, and then we take them off. And then afterwards, before the Kaddish, because you have to have something said before Kaddish, so the Chazan says a kapitel tefillin quietly, and then says Kaddish, and then we daven Musaf only in the talus without tefillin. And there's the well-known minhag also that which is brought by Poskim, that if you're still in the middle of Shacharis, or otherwise you still have tefillin on, when it comes to Keser, then cover them for the same reason, because you shouldn't be showing off your Keser while we're attributing a Keser to the Eved Shtetl.